Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
They have a foul to give, and there it is as Pachulia knocks down Westbrook, then stands over him. They're certainly going to take a look at that.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
We're trying our best. You know, we really care about the product that we put on the court. We truly are a tight-knit team. You know, we care about each other, and we've just been struggling. And we're trying to fight through it, and we need our fans and people that support our team to fight through it with us.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Ha 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 ha! Roy Hibbert hit another three. Amazing! Ha ha.
Is that basically the entire NBA just laughing every time they play the Portland Trail Blazers?
Yeah, I think that one sums up where the Blazers are at right now. Roy Hibbert is like closing his eyes and throwing things at the hoop and they're going in. Intended alley-oops are turning into beautiful jump shots from Roy Hibbert. When you play the Blazers, amazing things happen.
Could you do me a favor, Joe? Could you try to isolate that audio and just pull that creepy fake laugh?
Roy Hibbert with an amazing night.
Does anybody else hate Frank Kaminsky for no reason?
He's got real I hate you face.
Doesn't he? I just cannot stand that guy. I couldn't stand him in college. I can't stand him in the NBA.
I don't hate him because I can relate to his struggle of I hate you face.
You do have a bit of I hate you face.
Yeah, I had somebody come up to me this morning. I came in and said, hey, good morning. And they go, are you okay? And I was like, what?
What do you mean,
like,
am I okay?
Are you okay? I'm like, what are you talking about? They were like, you seemed really upset yesterday. And I was like, I wasn't even mad. I actually had a good day yesterday.
You had a scowl on your face for 4.5 hours in the building.
You're like, well, I walked by and you didn't look happy. And I was like, oh, I was thinking about the way salmon run up river. And then they started laughing.
That's a great line. You're so upset that the crime dog got voted out of the Hall of Fame again.
Do you want to get me started right now?
That one, yeah.
Jeez Louise, man.
Wisconsin prejudice right out of the gate, shaking my head. Wait till we make our NFL picks. I'll make up for the Wisconsin prejudice for the NFC championship.
No,
game.
I think in college, I completely see where you're coming from.
I hated those Wisconsin teams.
Well, Wisconsin's traditionally like the white team.
Sam Decker was the other
Sam
guy,
Decker.
Right? Him and Sam Decker. Oh, I never really had
much appreciation for him. He's fun to watch, but I didn't like him. In college, I didn't like Kaminsky, but I'll say right now in the NBA, I think I like Frank Kaminsky. Frank the Tank.
What are his averages this year? I mean, he's a decent little ball player. He killed the Blazers last night. He had 11 points in the fourth quarter.
He's a good role player.
there's the Kaminsky laugh. 10 points, 4 boards. Better than Myers Leonard.
When Myers plays, he's the victory cigar now. Or the losing, relieve players.
Last year as a rookie, he was 7.5 points, 4 rebounds a game. This year he's gone up 10 points and 4 rebounds. How about that? Numbers improving for a young white big guy year in and year out.
Who can also stretch the floor from the perimeter.
And he also knows how to get in and grab a couple of rebounds every now and then.
And making significantly less than $40 million.
Did this just turn around on me that I want Frank Kaminsky more than I want Myers Leonard? That just kind of blew up in my face.
Would anybody disagree with you on that?
I did not see
honest
it going
to God,
that
anybody
way.
That's honestly watched the Blazers for more than 5 minutes, would you not take Frank Kaminsky over Myers Leonard?
I said it 2 weeks ago. I'd trade him for a washing machine. I think that offer still stands. One of those good ones, though. You know, like one of the like energy efficient washing machines doesn't raise up your PGE bill too much. Not just a rinky dink washing machine, a quality one. I'd do that deal.
Well, $40 million, I'd actually trade him for free media dinner at the Moda Center.
That's a deal I can't say no to.
Give Myers Leonard.
That's a deal I can't. Take that salary and feed media members and before then, games.
Yes.
Don't charge me $9 for your overcooked roast beef.
It's such an odd thing. Have you paid for those dinners?
No, I will not. I refuse to. I'll go hungry.
It's such an odd thing to pay because I know people don't really, they have never seen this for people that don't ever been in the media. But when we walk in kind of where the players and the visiting players walk through, right? And then right as you walk in, there's a big old media center. There's, you know, where they do the post-game press conference. You eat there pre-game. There's another media room where every person that has to blog or type something, they all put their laptops in there. And so you go in there for dinner, and there's usually like some roasted potatoes and some veggies.
Right, a little salad action.
Yeah, they have what they call like Asian night, and they'll call it Asian fusion.
Right.
And I think the meal is only like $4 or $5. But they don't have you pay where the meal is. They ask you to walk out of the media center, walk down a little bit in the Moda Center to go pay to this random guy who's at some black table.
Yeah, Joe Schmo is like sitting out in the corridor waiting for you to bring your $5 by.
And the guy's really nice. He always recognizes my name and goes, oh, here's your media credential. But like the walk over to him... If I scoop up a plate, I'm just going to eat it. I'm not going to pay for it.
I'm with you. I've stolen a couple meals, but I refuse to pay. Like if I get caught eating something and they'll, you know, that'll be the end of my stealing meals. But I won't just go up and pay just to eat a Moda Center meal.
Well, and I understand there's fans out there that like they have to pay an arm and a leg. Like I'm kind of one of them. When I go to games, I usually go into the concourse and I pay for actual food.
Yeah. This is a first world problem we're talking about right here.
No doubt about it. So people are probably out there rolling their eyes, right? Just to give you a glimpse, all media free food, it sounds great in theory. Some of them are not great.
No, not great.
And I'm kind of looking at you, Oregon State.
Oregon State meals are half-assed, for
They're
sure.
They're hot dogs that aren't fully cooked sometimes and some cookies that they've had around for months.
That is a Civil War battle that is won every single weekend by the Oregon Ducks.
Not even close.
Like, Oregon Duck press box meals at Autzen Stadium are through the roof compared to what Oregon State... I've only been to a handful of games as a media member at Oregon State, and I feel like every time, for some reason, it's a chili dog. Like, that's just what...
That's what
like,
they serve,
like,
yes.
That's their go-to. It's like you grab a lukewarm hot dog. You're not sure if it was cooked completely or not.
It's got a little green on it.
It's warm enough to eat those, so you're not going to complain.
Yes.
And then you slabber a little chili, maybe a little cheese, a couple of vegetables, an onion if you're into that kind of thing, and that's your meal.
I get a little arrogant. I'm thinking in my head, hey, I'm here to cover you. Right. I'm here doing a job. Right. I'm giving you exposure. Yeah, you can't give me more into chili dog.
I'm bumming your program
They
right
also
now.
Serve the elementary school salad bags that they you can go buy at a grocery store for like 5 cents.
You shake it up with the
you gotta shake
the salad dressing in there.
They dump it in a bowl. Did I ever tell you the time that I banned? I actually was one of the reasons they stopped giving media members food at Oregon State's Valley Football Center.
Because you just go steal meals, I'm assuming.
So what would happen is we'd go to the Valley Football Center during Riley's era, and you could go up there, and that's where the players were getting their meals, and we could talk to Riley, we could talk to coordinators.
Brandon, good to see you.
Good afternoon. And then the players would come out, and sometimes we could talk to them for 5 minutes before they get their meals. And so they'd have a world-class everything, right? They have a yogurt bar, they have an ice cream station, they've got just first course, just beautiful meals. The media members used to be able to eat those. Like, we were allowed to get a plate and go have lunch while we were there doing interviews and stuff.
You totally took it too far.
And Riley
I see College Sprague in there, like, struggling meal to meal, going in there, taking advantage of it.
Well, Riley caught me back-to-back days. He looked on my plate, and he kind of gave me, like, the side eye, the stink eye.
What are you, an offensive lineman?
Well, yeah, if you saw my plate, you'd be like, oh, my God, he hit the yogurt bar up. He's got ice cream.
What, you need 1,000-calorie meals here, Sprager?
He's got spaghetti. And, like, 3 days later, I went back to go do interviews, and I picked up a plate, and the SID goes, oh, hey, Brandon, media is no longer allowed to have that food. And then I was like, what? And they took me to the side, and I had somebody that was working for the team at the time. They took me to the side and basically explained, yeah, Riley noticed how big the portions were that you guys were taking.
You took it for granted, Sprager. You took it for granted.
Basically axed it.
That's such a media member thing to do.
That's a media member.
Anything that we get for free, we just immediately pounce on. Like, that's the first instinct of a media member. If something is free, is offered to you, you take advantage of it.
Well, the goodie bags, like bowl games
for
and stuff.
Sure. I went to the national title game for the Oregon Auburn as a media member. I still use that suitcase.
No, you don't.
Yeah, it's a great suitcase. It has a BCS national title like logo on it. You roll it around, you feel important. People look at you like, wow, was that guy a part of the game? No, not really, but I was there and I got a suitcase out of it.
Well, and somebody just texted, I'm not sure about sports media, but tech media usually gets free beer, which I abuse entirely. After Blazer games, we get free IPAs from Widmer.
Yeah, they do. They put a Widmer keg in the media room.
And they don't ask you, but they're kind of inclined to tip.
I don't tip.
Most people don't tip.
I also feel guilty when I sit in there and have like three of them.
Oh, you've had three?
No.
Good Lord.
What?
What is your problem?
They don't fill them up all the way. It's not a full beer. No, it's a half pour.
I think I'm going to have to go against you here. I think it's a full 12 ounce, dude. I think you're an absolute boozer. I can't believe you had three.
Well, it's a long game. You're covering it. You get out of the locker room. You're working until 11 o'clock at night. What's wrong with having a beer before you go home?
One of those games, I was talking to one of the Blazer higher-ups. We were just kind of, you know, shooting the breeze. And I hadn't eaten anything since lunch that day. I never ate any of the media food and never went to the concourse. I had two IPAs, and I immediately realized that I was starting to feel pretty good.
Yeah, with nothing in the stomach, that hits you
and
quick.
I stopped that conversation abruptly. I was like, I got to go.
I'm out of here. Sorry.
Got out of there as soon as I possibly could.
Oh, that's great. Somebody said free. That's my favorite four-letter F word. Free. That's true, man. Anything for free, we'll take it.
But hey, no, the Blazers, they lost again.
Yeah, this sucks. Like, it's just this total suck moment.
I want to know from listeners, 55305 before we break here. Are you waving the white flag on all things Blazers?
Hell yes.
Are you waving the white flag, yes or no, 55305? We'll talk about their pathetic effort yesterday against the lowly Charlotte Hornets, who have lost five games in a row going into that contest. They lost by 22 in Charlotte. And Damian Lillard, by the way, is still backing Terry Stotts. And we've got a poll question Facebook post that we'll bring to you. We'll talk about that next. You got Dirt and Sprague. Happy Thursday to everybody out there on 1080 The Fan.
Just like music. Uh-huh.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Happy Thursday. We are 24 hours away. Just a little more than 24 hours away from officially going to Las Vegas.
Yeah, that happens tomorrow right after the show. We're heading right to a bar afterwards. We don't fly out till 7:30. Snapchat's going to be off the hook this weekend.
So, yeah, give us a follow on Snapchat if you want to follow along our adventures. I'm sure somebody's going to be drunk, either Dirt or myself.
Somebody's going to be drunk?
Yeah.
Come on.
Touche.
We're going to Vegas. You've never been to Vegas.
No, I have not.
Not only are we going to Vegas, but you're going for your first time in Vegas for 3 nights. Which is risky.
Yeah, that might be pushing it for some people.
That's not 3 nights is not recommended.
Yeah.
Usually two nights, you hit your fill, you get the hell out of there. 3 nights, we're going to have to pace ourselves.
Well, and I enjoyed you just before we cracked the mic. Hey, you know, I didn't even think about, should we bring nice clothes? Yeah, the guy invited us. We're going to a nice steak dinner Saturday. We're going to go to a comedy show.
What? Come on.
Hanging out with some important people.
T-shirt and jeans doesn't work, no?
I think you go white tee.
Well, just go white tee.
White tee and boots.
We're a cutoff or something to see.
Rock some shorts.
Hey, we're in radio. We're not expected to dress nice.
That's touche. Good point. Yeah. Hey, I don't know if you saw it. The Blazers lost by 22 yesterday. They have now lost three games in a row. They lost to Orlando, got their ass kicked by Washington, and basically got their ass kicked last night by Charlotte.
You know, I hate to say this because this is the fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three times, as George Bush would say. Can't get fooled again. I was surprised last night. I don't know why. Going into that game, I expected something with the way they came out against Washington on Monday and just got ran out of the gym. They didn't look interested. They didn't hustle. They got outplayed from start to finish. They basically trailed by 20 points the entire game. And once again, we hear all the talk for 48 hours about how they're not going to let it happen and how they're going to come out and play hard and for four quarters. Look, at least they put three good quarters together, and then it all fell apart in the fourth quarter. I was surprised, and at this point, I shouldn't be. That's on me because of my expectations, but I think at this point, we just know what this team is, and it's not a very good basketball team.
Well, a lot of talk about Terry Stotts and job security and how much of this is his fault, this whole slump and being 8 games under .500. Damian Lillard was asked about that by Jason Quick yesterday in the locker room after their 22-point loss, and this is Dame's feelings on if the team has quit on Terry Stotts.
Yeah, I think that's a given. You know, we all respect the hell out of Coach Stotts and our entire coaching staff. And that's another thing that's frustrating for us as players is, you know, the amount of joy we get out of playing for our coaching staff and how much time we know they spend preparing us and how sharp they are in the preparation and, you know, them having us ready for the next opponent. And we go out there and not always execute it to the best of our ability. And, you know, that's the frustrating part because we want to do well, not just to win games, obviously, but, you know, we want to go out there and bring W's for the effort that they put out. And sometimes it doesn't work out. It hasn't been working out for us lately, but I think they have our attention. You know, we respect them, and, you know, it's more so us than anything else. You know, the coaches ain't out there. They ain't out there shooting, and they're not out there turning it over, and they're not out there having to play defense.
Yeah, so Damian Lillard's backing his coach as the locker room. Terry Stotts has not lost the locker room. This is on them as the players. And you know, it's funny because when you reach this point of losing three straight and to teams that most people thought you should be beating. So December 15th, if you trace it back to December 15th, the Blazers have 5 wins since December 15th. They are tied with the Lakers and Suns for least amount of wins in that span in the entire Western Conference. The Suns are dead last in the West, and the Lakers, we know how god-awful they are. That's how bad a basketball they've been playing. And when you get to this point, Dirt, and this is what's so funny, and by funny, I mean, like, you listen to media, you read, you hear fans on social media. Nobody has an answer for what's going on. Nobody.
Well, because I don't think there is one answer. I think there's a number of answers that you can point to. The roster fit in terms of what you did this offseason. Evan Turner's had a couple of good moments, but for the most part, hasn't played solid basketball. You were relying on guys, especially like Myers Leonard and Allen Crabbe, to take the next step in their career with the contracts you gave them and expecting them to be consistent role players. They haven't necessarily been that. Myers, we know how bad he's been all season. Allen Crabbe, a couple of nice moments, but on the whole throughout the year, hasn't lived up to the $75 million contract. You have great play from Dame and CJ on the offensive end of the floor. That's not a surprise to anybody, but the other issue is defense. So I think you have a roster that is overpaid, that doesn't have necessarily the same work ethic that they had last year, the same sense of urgency maybe that they had last year, the same chip on the shoulder that they had last year. You combine that with a couple of guys that haven't developed and Evan Turner not panning out in free agency. There's your perfect storm for a team that has been hugely disappointing this year.
Yeah, and I asked before the break, are you ready to wave the white flag? Are you waving the white flag as a Blazer fan with the way the rest of the season is kind of set up? Now, I would like to remind you before I read some texts here and get your thoughts. Last year, I looked it up. Their record about the same as where they were now. However, their run when they really turned it on and hit that corner and became that playoff team, it came in February. So we're still a couple weeks away from where they turned the corner last year. I don't believe that last year's team is this year's team. I don't buy into the theory, but for people out there, just a reference, last year they didn't turn the corner until February, and right now they're lined up with about the same as they were playing last season.
Yeah, I'm not willing to do that. I haven't seen a consistent stretch of basketball. Last year to me is so much different than what this year is. If they make the playoffs, I wouldn't be shocked because the bottom half of the Western Conference is that bad. And basically, if you play slightly below 500 basketball or 500 basketball, you're going to get into the playoffs this year from where they're at. And that's not outside the realm of possibility. It's unfortunate because I've reached the point where I am just praying that doesn't happen.
You don't want them to get the
eight seed,
yeah.
I am just praying that doesn't happen. That once you get to this point where they're at in the season, that's fine. Say they go on a great run and say they finish the season strong. What's the realistic ceiling that they can accomplish? A 7 seed?
At this point,
go great. You're 8 games below 500. Things go great
and
the rest of the
way. And you turn it on at best.
You get to a 7 seed. Congratulations. You're swept in the first round by San Antonio. And you're just stuck in that wheel of purgatory.
Or Houston,
whoever the hell the number 2 seed is in the Western Conference. And that's why you get to this point, and I always go back to the debate we had after Lillard's rookie year that I used to argue with Blazer fans all the time and say, because that team was similar. They were pushing towards the end of the year towards a playoff spot. And I said, you don't want an 8 seed. And people said, well, you want the experience. And no, you want a lottery pick. And what did they end up getting out of that lottery pick? CJ McCollum. You've now reached the same exact point that making the playoffs is absolutely meaningless. What you want is the best possible draft pick to start to fill out this roster. And being a 7 or 8 seed is not going to accomplish that.
A few texts at 55305. It's not looking good, boys. I'm over it. No use in teasing us
and then getting absolutely destroyed in the first round against Golden State, this is a real problem. People need to start understanding that this is unfortunately a team we have, and I'll say right now, might just need to clean house. Another one, I'm not going to stop watching the Blazers because I apparently love to torture myself, but yes, absolutely have given up any hopes for this season. Let's see, another one. As a fan, I want to see as many wins as possible, but we know the Blazers aren't beating the Cavs or Golden State in the next couple of years. Regroup, devise a plan, execute the plan, be it through the draft or trades, just get it done. Another one, white flag is up. At this point, we need to tank for a top lottery pick. 8 seed does nothing. Best draft class in years coming in this year. Another one, I don't think it's a Stotts thing, though. Honestly, moving CJ for a bigger shooting guard who can play D doesn't sound bad to me. Missing Henderson badly from a D standpoint from last season.
But look, I don't want to beat a dead horse on this one, but was anybody else watching the game last night thinking, man, it'd be great to have Nicholas Batum?
Yeah.
17-7-7.
Well, and I knew going into that game, there are elements of Charlotte that are good, decent matchups with Portland, but whenever you have a Nick Batum as kind of your point forward, that's going to cause the entire disruption of matchup nightmares. That's why that's not a good matchup for them. They've beaten Charlotte last year. I've seen them beat Charlotte with Nick Batum. But I'm just saying, when Nick Batum is playing well and he's engaged and focused as he was, it's hard to beat them. Because who are you matching up on Nick Batum? CJ McCollum?
No.
Great. 6'3 on what? 6'7, 6'8?
He's what you want Evan Turner to be.
He basically is.
Yeah, good defender.
Well, he's a much better player than Evan Turner.
Well, no, I'm saying, but that's what, when you signed Evan Turner, that was the role you were thinking of. Because before that, Damian Lillard had somebody else that could handle the ball and that could take pressure on him, off of him, on the offensive end. They were hoping Evan Turner could come in and fill that role, and he does run the offense, but it hasn't lived up to the same level of a Nicholas Batum.
Yeah. Somebody else said, in my eyes, it's hard to blame Dame and CJ completely, even with their terrible defense, considering they're the only ones consistently scoring. And that's kind of been my whole point, is I know how god-awful they have been. Dame is significantly worse on defense even than CJ, and that's been night and day since day one. But because of what they give you offensively, without them, you are maybe the worst team in the NBA.
Oh, you're down. Without those two guys in the offensive years that they're having, oof. Yeah, you think this team's bad right now. Imagine it without any offense.
Well, I'm going to say it one more time. This will be the last time I say this, because I've said it a couple times already, and it's not going to change throughout the rest of this season. At this point, you're past the halfway point of games played, and then obviously you saw the All-Star game, but they're already past the midway point of their season. I really believe this. The Stotts blame, I get where it comes from. He's the coach. There are nights where they don't have energy. They cited that last night. They don't have energy. They're not fired up. It's such a night-to-night thing. Mm-hmm. The coach gets blamed for that. And I'm not going to defend everything Terry Stotts. He's had a tough season, too.
For sure.
But if I'm pointing blame, last time I'm going to say it, it's Neil Olshey. Mm-hmm. It's not Dame. It's not CJ. It's not Terry Stotts. It's Neil Olshey. You put the roster together, and you said 9 games better this roster was. It's not. So I get the Stotts stuff, but for me, I'm not going to look at Stotts. Why the hell would you want to fire him? Why is that even a thought for people? You think Stotts is going to go, and we're going to get, who are we going to get?
Yeah, where are you going to go from there?
You want George Karl?
What he did with that roster last year.
That was amazing.
It was amazing. And what he did with a bad roster last year is almost the reason you're in this position right now. He was such a good coach last year and proved so many people wrong last year that all of a sudden we had expectations of Western Conference Finals. And that just leads into our disappointment.
Yeah, somebody said second highest payroll in the league for what? Yeah,
great point.
That's the problem. When you have salary cap space, you got to spend the money, and then you get any of the players that they wanted. How many games of Joel Embiid have you watched this year, honestly?
I have not watched any 76ers games, but I've seen highlights, and he's a lot of fun to watch.
They play Friday. We're probably going to miss that game. If you DVR it, I would actually recommend you to DVR it. And when we get back, maybe on a Tuesday night, if nothing's going on.
I've told you for a number of years now, man, I trust the process. If you suck for that long and you get that many top three picks, eventually you're going to hit on one or two of them and you're going to be a winning team.
He is so much fun to watch.
They haven't even had Ben Simmons this year and they're fun to watch.
I'm going to go a step further. I think I would trade anybody on the roster for Joel Embiid. And I don't even know if he'd break down or not.
Wow.
I have that much fun watching him.
He's also a lot of fun off the court, too.
He is a monster, and Dame's got a great personality,
He did
too.
A Triple H intro the other day.
He did. He spit the water out.
He blew water out as he was walking out on the court, man. He's awesome.
And they're chanting trust the process every single time they're playing games.
I love it.
We were supposed to do this interview a couple days ago, but we got pushed back because of the rainstorm that rained our show out. But Seattle Times columnist Matt Calkins wrote an article saying the Seahawks are just a flat-out unlikable team. And we'll get his thoughts on their off-the-field antics as well. That's next, but first, Joe with a sports update.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, really good thoughts on the Portland Trailblazers season from a lot of listeners out there. We were going to do this interview a couple days ago, but got pushed due to weather. So let's just bring him on now, talk a little Seattle Seahawks. Matt Calkins of the Seattle Times columnist, seattletimes.com, on Twitter, @Matt_Calkins. Hey, Matt, thanks for rescheduling and coming on the radio show, man. We really appreciate the time.
No problem, man.
Read your article on the Seahawks going from brash to just plain unlikable. So the first question I want to ask you is, you're probably going to be banned from that locker room for the rest of your life, right?
I've already been blocked by Richard Sherman, so, you know, that's gotten, the ball's already gotten rolling. So, yeah, probably so.
Jeez Louise, you've been blocked on Twitter by Richard Sherman?
It was that quick,
yeah.
Huh?
Didn't take long.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, obviously, now that we know the Seahawk players' reaction to it, I'm curious what reaction you've got from Seahawk fans, because I know a couple of Seahawk fans in my life that have agreed with your article and some that have been upset. What's been the reaction from Hawk fans?
Overwhelmingly positive, surprisingly. I really, truly thought I'd get crushed when I put that out there. I wasn't writing it to get attention. I wasn't just trying to stir the pot. I believed every word in that column. And when I put it out there, I expected, you know, maybe a lot of positive reaction from national fans, people who didn't like the Seahawks, but locally, I expected, hey, man, get the hell out of here. But really, it's been overwhelming, no matter what the medium, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook, whether it's my inbox, whether it's the comment section, which is usually just the place where everyone comes out just to bash the writer. But even there, it's been pretty good. And I think, you know, it's struck a chord with people. And it's nice to see that there are fans that actually have some rational perspectives, because you look at the way Richard Sherman behaved over the second half of the season. You look at that outburst, that unapologetic outburst that Bennett had towards that reporter, Bill Wixey, in the locker room after the game. And a lot of the antics, you know, with guys like Jeremy Lane and Jaren Reed just blowing through blockers during the victory formation. There's a lot of things that have turned people off, and I'm glad to see that people agree and feel the same way.
We're talking with Matt Calkins, Seattle Times. How long have you been up there, Matt? Over a year now?
Yeah, about a year and a half. I got up here in August of 2015.
So when you first got up there, I mean, just take our listeners through, like, when you first get up there and you're starting to kind of get to know some of these guys and interview them and get a feel for the franchise and the players, what are some changes that you just maybe noticed in the attitude of some of these players?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, and one thing I did mention in the column is how many good guys really are on that.
No doubt about it, yeah.
And that the behavior of a couple, unfortunately, detracts from a lot of good people in there, both who are both philanthropists and just flat-out polite. But I would say that this team has gotten a little stale from a, you know, a winning perspective, and I think there were so many expectations for them early, and you know, they came in there and they were praised. They were the toast of the town, the toast of the country in a lot of ways. I mean, people really loved that team, and they took everyone by storm. And then once that Super Bowl loss happened, you know, I think at first it was just kind of shock. But then you really saw them never recover from that. They really haven't been the same team since that. So a lot of the questions that Sherman and other people are getting are more like, hey, man, what happened? Or why aren't you guys what you used to be? So I'm not sure if the people changed necessarily, or if the line of questioning that was coming their way has changed. And I think people have gotten really annoyed. I think guys have used that excuse, oh, well, you guys never played the game. That's been a big refrain in the Seahawks locker room. So I don't know if their attitudes have really gotten, or their personalities have gotten worse. I just think that their personalities are being revealed a little bit when they're faced with some adversity.
Well, and you mentioned in the article kind of the culture around Pete Carroll. We know Pete Carroll is a player's coach. He tells these guys to be themselves, to speak their minds. And I'm wondering how much blame you put on his shoulders of maybe allowing this to go. I mean, when it's fun and they're winning, it's great, and then you get these negative stories, to not corral it in a little bit. I mean, how much blame does Carroll deserve?
I think you have to put some blame on him, right? I mean, what Sherman did with the play calling, with questioning the play calling and his refusal to apologize and to repeatedly double down and call out his coach and call out his offensive coordinator is just unprecedented. I've never seen anything like that. I've seen players get mad at coaches. I've seen guys lash out at the media before. What Sherman did with Bevel and with Carroll in terms of the play calling and basically defying them on the field and then defying them after the game and the defying the press conference a week later is just crazy to me. And I think you have to say, Pete, you created this monster. You said, you know, go ahead and act out and do whatever you want. And worse, he never really punished Sherman for this. At least he didn't do anything externally that anybody would notice. He didn't sit a series. I thought he should have sat out a half. This is the kind of thing that I think Bill Belichick would say, you're off the team, to be quite honest. But there were no repercussions. And so I think that's part of the reason it's easy to dislike this team now from an outside perspective is because you can't just say it's a couple of bad apples, a couple of guys who've made the wrong decision. Pete Carroll has condoned this behavior. Mm-hmm. So I think you can make it a team-wide thing at this point.
We're talking with Matt Calkins, Seattle Times columnist, wrote about the Seahawks going from brash to just plain unlikable. We did a preseason interview with KJ Wright, Kevin Pierre-Lewis, and Mike Morgan. They came up here because we're the affiliate in Portland. And, I did appreciate that you put that in the article. Instead of just writing about how annoying or unlikable the team can be, you did also highlight the great people. And we got to know KJ Wright a little bit. He was a really nice guy. So I like that part of the article. But when you look at the rest of those guys, you know, the Bennetts, the Shermans, the Earl Thomas with the weird tweet about Tom Brady out of nowhere. Yeah. Like, those are the guys that get the notoriety. Those are the guys that get the camera time. So that's kind of representative of who the Seattle Seahawks are. My question to you would basically be, is there anything that's going to change with this team, or is this basically turning into who they might be with their contracts?
I think, unfortunately, it might be that one, and it'll be interesting to see, if there's any kind of backlash in the locker room. You mentioned how, after the article based on Sherman blocking me, that we know how the players feel about this. Mm-hmm. I don't know that the players necessarily disagree with a lot of what was in that column, too. I'm not sure how many of them read it. But you could tell that there were some people who were getting really annoyed, especially on the offensive end, when Sherman's basically saying, don't throw from the one. Mm-hmm. And these guys are going, what? Who are you? Like, we put all this time in. We're, right. we're capable players. Like, we're more than capable of scoring from the one, as we have repeatedly, And so I think there was some tension between the offense and the defenses here for a lot of understandable reasons. But no, I'd like to think that Sherman realized he dug himself such a hole that next year, even if he doesn't apologize for it, he's a little more careful about it and a little bit more understanding and a little bit more gracious, just because I think that's best for him and I think that's best for his teammates as well. Michael Bennett's just crazy, to be honest. Like, that's not the first time that he's blown up on right. A media guy in the locker room. I think it's just the first time it's been reported. But, he basically asked the cancer survivor what adversity he'd been through. So I have a feeling that was just so embarrassing to him. Hopefully it was, that he might reel it in a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, these guys are frustrated. These guys are used to winning. They've wanted to win. They're expected to win. So, the thing that I would say that would probably quell it the most is if they did come out and were healthy and just started winning again. I mean, that's the one thing that I think is going to get people in a good mood, and it sort of cloaks any misbehavior, and people kind of forget about any bad behavior if that happens. I don't necessarily like living in that world, knowing it all goes away, and people excuse it if they win, but that's probably the best course of action for them to take.
Fandom can bring out, I think, the worst in people with sports, especially football, college, and pro. I mean, you just get people that say idiotic things in support of their team. Have you been surprised by the amount of people that have emailed, tweeted, maybe commented on just saying, you know what, I'm a lifelong Hawks fan, completely agree, I don't like this team?
I've been shocked by how many people have done that. I really didn't think that would happen, because you are right, and you are always going to get your blind Seahawks fan who can, or blind sports fan who will condone any behavior. I mean, one of the most sickening things I ever saw is when Ray Rice first came back to the Ravens, and like, right. everyone outside of training camp was giving him a standing ovation. I'm like, what are you doing? He doesn't care about you. Like, just because his success has nothing to do with you guys, yet people just, invest in these guys emotionally like it's a religion. But yeah, I really have been. And like I said, there's going to be, I've gotten some people like, get out of our town, you never like the Seahawks go back to California. that happens all the time. But really, I would say 85 to 90% has been, I'm a lifelong Seahawks fan. I like this team. I'm embarrassed too. Thank you for saying that. And to me, that's been it's been pretty rewarding.
Well, hey, man, just to give you a heads up, I think most of us remember your time briefly here in Portland before you went to San Diego. So just to give you a heads up, we like the team that we have in Portland, but we don't like watching them play. That's kind of what we're doing.
I can't blame you for that. It's been a little rough, man. Man, I've always said that the Blazers fans are probably the most rabid fan base that I've been around, and I think I might still agree with that today, because the Seahawks fans, you know, they've been supportive ever since the Seahawks have been good, but to see the Moda Center sell out every night has just been crazy. But it's just it's tough to watch, man. I think I'd like to see Paul Allen, I don't know if I can speak for you guys, just, you know, tear that team apart and kind of rebuild, but it seems like they're just kind of stuck as between the sixth and the tenth best team in the conference forever. So I bet that's got to be frustrating.
Well, we'll just continue to trust the process here in Portland and hope that someday it pans out for us.
That's working in Philly, right?
It absolutely is. Hey, man, thanks so much for rescheduling and joining us and talking about your article on the Seattle Seahawks. Really appreciate the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from Matt Calkin, SeattleTimes.com, on his article, The Seahawks Going from Brash to Just Plain Unlikable.
I think it's a good read, whether you like the Seahawks or you don't, whether you're a Seahawks fan or you're not. It's a good read, because I think every fan base from time to time is going to have to go through this. If you're a sports fan, there's eventually going to be a player that's unlikable on your team, or a player that acts like a D-bag on your team. And you're going to have to kind of look in the mirror and say, how do I want to react to this? And what's the right way to continue to support my team, continue to show my colors, but also voice my displeasure?
All right, want to know, 55305, are the Seahawks the most unlikable team in the NFL? And also coming up next, the Seahawks didn't report an injury about Richard Sherman prior to the playoff game versus Atlanta, and now they might be getting punished pretty harshly. We'll tell you what the punishment is next on 1080 The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Just a good reference point for you here. This is back-to-back text during our Matt Calkins interview. Hey, F that guy. Very next text. That guy is awesome. Just an idea of what we see on the text line on a daily basis.
A little bit of both, man. A little bit of both.
Hey, was that a good guess? I don't know. Let's go to the text line and see how they felt.
If somebody hated them and somebody loved them, that usually means it's a good guess.
Yeah, they are broken down the middle.
It's never easy to have somebody say this about your team. And I do want to hammer home the point, because we already had somebody text, a bunch of Niner fans piling in on the Hawks. Couple a-holes, but break up the team. Nobody's saying break up the team.
I don't think anybody said that. And why would you break that team up?
Also, nobody's criticizing the entire roster. Well, this is the example of a couple of bad apples that give you a bad reputation. And some people disagree with it. That's fine. But what some of these guys have done this year is pretty douchey. And I have no problem with Matt Calkins pointing that out.
Well, and here's my whole point. This is what I said to him, was just, you know, sports can almost bring out the worst in us as fans. And I think all of us, you guys out there, Joe, everybody at some point has had an ugly side brought out because their sports team
lost. Absolutely.
Or something is going against, or somebody's saying something that you don't like.
Absolutely.
I get the game as well as anybody, because not only have I had Duck fans call me a Beaver honk, I've had Beaver fans tell me I'm not big enough of a fan. I don't understand, because I'm not a loyal fan. So I've seen it both ways. I don't think it's wrong to point out that you have very unlikable players on your team. Now, look, I think Richard Sherman's great for the sport of football.
For sure. He has been for a number of years now.
And I'm biased to that because of what my job is. But I do believe that wholeheartedly, that it's good for the sport to have guys that almost push the envelope and make us think different ways or provide us with controversy.
Right.
Michael Bennett kind of does the exact same stuff. It doesn't mean the team needs to be broken up. Why the hell would you break that team up? It's just pointing out simply, and I don't know how you can't do this as a sports fan, because I've been able to do this with every team I've ever liked. When you have that group of really douchey people, for lack of a better term, you can't just admit it.
Right, and to me, it's
those
not that hard to do.
Those guys aren't well-liked.
No.
And they've lost a lot of respect for people over the season.
Yeah. If anything, even as a fan, I'd probably embrace it. I'd embrace the dislikability.
But you can at least admit that they are douchey.
For sure. It's like having a guy like Draymond Green on your team. He's a D-bag, but sure, I love having him on my team. That's what I would do if I were a Warrior fan. And to me, I think the icing on the cake for all this was the Bennett situation in the locker room. Bill Wixie, I believe, was the reporter that he went at. And he basically, the tirade that Calkins puts in the article here, I think it's a great point where he says, the quote starts, "You non-playing bleep, what did you do with your life? What did you do with your lifetime?" He's yelling at this reporter. What injury did you play through? What adversity you went through? And Wixie ended up being a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma. He's battled cancer for a number of years, and he came out the other side, thankfully, alive. But I love this paragraph in the column where he says, "It's doubtful Bennett knew that the target of his outburst spent years battling cancer, but it speaks to how out of touch an athlete who just signed a $31 million extension must be to think a playoff loss trumps everyone else's problems." And I think that puts it, hits the nail on the head for me. And I think it sums up kind of what the year has been for Seattle, that it's not in the entire roster, but you do something like that to a cancer survivor after a playoff game, it's a bad look, and there's no problem acknowledging that.
Somebody just texted, "I'm a Seahawks fan. F Ray Rice. I want my Hawks to be a-holes on defense. That's how you win." And another one, "I love the stuff with the Seahawks. Weed out the BS bandwagon fans. Go Hawks." Another one, "Lifelong fan. I don't hate anybody on this team." So we're getting a lot of differing opinions at 55305. I do want to bring this up because I did enjoy the interview with Calkins. I like talking to him because I thought it was a good article. This came across the wire today. Adam Schefter and Chris Mortensen reported that Hawks head coach Pete Carroll did not disclose Richard Sherman's injured leg. He left early from that one. And in September 19th finding, the Seahawks were fined $400,000. Carroll was fined $200,000 for what the league termed violations of rules that prohibit excessive on-field physical contact. This was during a June 6th organized team activity, the OTAs. The team was also docked its fifth-round pick for 2017 and lost its first week of OTAs for next season. Sherman was listed as limited or did not practice on several practice reports without any disclosure of a knee injury, as required by league injury reporting policy. And Mortensen is saying, instead of a fifth-round pick that they were punished for, it may be upgraded to a second because they did not report the injury, and there may be also more fines coming for Pete Carroll and the team.
That's tough. It's the lifeblood of their franchise. That's how they've built this roster, and they have a lot of needs this offseason. They got great pieces in place, but a couple of big needs that they need to address. And when you start losing picks, like potentially a second-round pick, that's a huge blow for Seattle.
And I firmly believe this. There's been some talk about, you know, Pete Carroll, and obviously we know what happened at USC, et cetera. He's a little shady. I don't know how you deny that, but I also believe some of the best coaches in NFL history were shady.
Everybody toes that line.
Everybody does.
Pete Carroll's not alone in that. I do think the interesting part of this, though, is his role as a coach in all of this.
Yeah.
And look, some people love his style. Some people don't like it. I think him and Jim Harbaugh have always been the prime examples because they were rivals for a number of years of their coaching strategies. Harbaugh's hands-on. He's a red ass. He's going to get in your face. He's very by the book, and Pete Carroll is the exact opposite. He lets you be yourself. He lets you speak your mind. But at times, when you allow a team and a roster to do that, when you have outspoken guys that get big contracts and big heads, they're going to step in it every now and then and get themselves in trouble.
By the way, Darren tweeting us at Darren Spray, could you please send a link to the article I'd like to read? We just did. We quote tweeted it on our tease for Calkins. So go to our Twitter account at Darren Spray. You'll see the quote tweet with Matt Calkins article there. And you'll be able to click it and you can check it out. It's a good read. He gives a good side of the Seahawks, the people who are good people, and then the guys who kind of acted like a-holes all season long. We've got a lot to get to in hour number two. We'll talk about Ducks basketball season and their beatdown of Oregon State. A few days back, ESPN college basketball analyst Seth Greenberg will join the show. But we'll start with the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame class that was announced yesterday. Tim Raines, Pudge Rodriguez, Jeff Bagwell are the ones going to get in this year. Are any of them actually Hall of Fame players, though? That's next on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.